This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. And this portion of the show is brought to you by the Orrick Home Centers all across the St. Louis area. Great vacuum cleaners and other great cleaning products for your home. O-R-E-C-K spells Orrick. I am Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss here with me in the studio. And now news director Colin Jeffrey puts on his cape and becomes the superhero alter ego showbiz boy to talk about movies and other stuff. Hi, Colin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing fine. Nice to have you in the studio again today. Before we get to the reviews, did you happen to see Kate Upton in our town this week?
Yes, I did, in a picture with Alexandra Daddario, in fact.
Now,
I didn't
see
them. Did you watch True Detective?
Yes.
That is Woody Harrelson's mistress.
Okay.
So
okay.
Quite a foursome.
Yeah. Yes, they certainly are.
I saw their pictures. No, I didn't get to.
They were in town with William H. Macy and his wife, Felicity Huffman. They're all making a movie, or were making a movie earlier this week here in St. Louis called The Layover. I know nothing about it.
Well, that's all I know, too.
I'm pretty sure that anybody who spotted Kate Upton will remember it.
They didn't ask you now that you have movie credits?
Well, my movie hasn't come out yet.
Oh.
My movie hasn't come out until September.
If they asked me, but I was busy.
Yeah, Dan was more of a veteran. How many gigs did you get after your cameo appearance in Up in the Air, Dan? Major motion pictures? Too many to count?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's waiting for Up in the Air Again.
Yeah.
The sequel.
Yeah. Up in the Air Again.
The sequel, Put Me Down.
Up in the Air, yeah. In the Cloud.
Well, we do have a couple of movies that are already out and playing around town. Let's talk about those, including one that opened on Wednesday called Entourage, which is the big screen version of the movie, the series that ran on HBO for, what, half a dozen seasons?
Yeah, it started in 2000, yeah.
Now, before we get to the review, I have to ask you, as showbiz boy, why would you open that on Wednesday, June 4th?
Because you want to capture the box office early. That's honestly why. You want to open it before you run into San Andreas or anything like that on the weekends, a big blockbuster. You're going to try and get people who go out midweek, and as I'm certain we'll get to, you want to counteract what will more than likely be not great reviews.
Ah, okay.
That's part of why you do it, is it because, and we'll talk about it more, but when you look at how the critics have viewed it versus how people have viewed it.
Yeah.
They tell two different tales.
Did you watch Entourage on HBO?
I watched a few episodes of it. I was never a fanatic. That's not my brand of...
I was never a fanatic for it, but I started watching it when it first came on the air, and I was intrigued, and it was an interesting insider Hollywood tale of this up-and-coming young actor and his buddies who had he'd grown up with, and they kind of hung out with him, and he was, you know, 20-something, and they all hung out and had adventures with hot women and you know, inside the movie business kind of stuff in Hollywood. And it was kind of well-told in the first season, and then in the second season it came back, and there was more of the same, and then it was season after season after season, and I will admit to you that I watched every episode as kind of a guilty pleasure.
That's fair.
And it's the only reason I went to see the movie this week, because I had seen every episode of it on TV, and I thought, okay, well, guilty pleasure, I'll go watch another episode, now in 90-minute form.
Okay.
But you had not watched the series that much.
No, but I tuned back in for I've seen the series finale, and so I sort of saw, I don't know if you can call it growth with these characters, but we'll say that. There was some growth by the end of the series where our main... Well, the sort of the protagonist, Vincent Chase, Adrian Grenier, he settled down with a reporter, correct?
I don't remember.
He settled down with a woman, finally, put the womanizing days behind him. Ari, played by Jeremy Piven, in the role, he should play this role forever.
Yeah.
This is Jeremy Piven. I don't know that he's even acting. I think this might be Jeremy Piven. Just as a human, he might be this role. Ari,
yeah.
He had stepped back and retired and was going to work on his marriage, I guess. And it seemed, okay, sort of they grew out of this Hollywood lifestyle, just disposable women.
Jeremy Piven had been Vincent Chase's
agent,
and then worked his way up into a studio executive or something like that, yeah.
So, I mean, I watched it. So I knew where the characters left off. And now we've picked
now the series went off the air 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
None of the actors, with the exception of Jeremy Piven, who's continued to work, none of these actors has gone on to do anything else, right?
Nothing of note.
Adrian Grenier, Kevin Connolly, Kevin Dillon, and Jerry Ferrara. They were the star of a TV series for years, and then that was pretty much it.
It was a phenomenon for a while there. I mean, that was, for a few years, this was HBO's flagship show in, you know, the mid-2000s. This was getting people to sign up for HBO, and it turned out they're not that great.
No.
Outside of this.
Okay, so what did you think of the movie?
Well, I was disappointed from the beginning when they sort of, they do this kind of clunky montage. If you've never seen the show, you can pick up the movie and they'll kind of explain what we did. They show.
Let me just interrupt you for a second to say that that exposition comes at a cost. And the cost is, it's told to you by Piers Morgan.
Yes.
Who is a despicable human being and was rightly canceled by CNN for being horrible on the air. It could never claim to be a journalist, even though he once ran one of those British trashy tabloids. And is just, like I said, a horrible human being. And the fact that he appeared on screen in this made my stomach turn.
So not a good start to the movie.
And the fact that they have him as the guy who is, you know, they make him out like, oh, yes. And Piers Morgan has the inside story on this, like he's a big TV celebrity. He's a has-been now, isn't he?
Yes. I don't know what he does now. I really don't. I don't know what he does. I think he's on... UK's Got Talent. I think he still judges that, maybe.
Mm.
So there you go.
All right.
So they do this montage, and the one charming moment I will say you get from it is you see Vincent Chase, his character, was discovered in a Mentos commercial way back in the day. And they show you that commercial, and you're like, oh, for fans of the show, isn't that cute?
Mm-hmm.
But outside that, the only other bit of sort of narration it sets up is that there will be a lot of cameo appearances. And they start off with, Piers Morgan, for some reason.
Yeah.
So it continues. In this case, what we find is Vincent wants to now direct a movie. He's the it man in Hollywood. And he says, I want to direct a movie. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try and line up financing through my friend Ari, who's now the head of a studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get, here's a stretch for an acting chops. We're going to get a Texas gazillionaire, who's kind of a hillbilly, to finance this, played by Billy Bob Thornton.
Yes.
So, you know, showing his range there, playing a bit of a hillbilly. And then it's the travail. If you've seen an episode, you understand. It's, oh, is it going to happen? Is everything going to work out for, you know, this chosen boy?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the movie goes. I have to say, the premise for the movie that he wants to direct.
Paper thin.
Is so dumb.
Yeah.
It's a CGI heavy telling of Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes. It's called Hyde.
He calls it Hyde to be edgy.
Yeah.
And it's probably a good thing.
Well, I don't know. It's a good thing we're not reviewing that.
Yes.
Although I'm not sure we would say anything more positive about it.
So where do we find ourselves? They're back to sort of their womanizing ways, and there are a ton of cameos, but even...
Well, before you get to the cameos.
Yes.
Would you agree with me that this movie has more hot women in it than any other movie this year?
Yeah.
Every place this guy goes, a party on a yacht, a party in his backyard, a club he goes to, it's 10, 10, 10, 10. Every woman is a 10.
Yes, but what's perhaps most disturbing is it's like a party on a yacht. Okay, you expect to see women in swimsuits there. And then it's like, oh, I'm walking down the street. Oh, look at this. Here's a woman wearing essentially nothing walking down the street with me.
Yeah.
It makes...
That's the fantasy aspect of the show and I guess the movie.
This show and this movie reinforce that what it is to me, it is a hybrid of soap opera for men and 50 Shades of Grey for men. It's this like weird convergence of nothing ever goes really wrong, passing of time is unimportant, and every woman is just exists to fulfill your sexual desires.
Yes.
And that's what it is.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
But
that's why it was when the show was on HBO, it was called the male version of Sex and the City.
Mm-hmm. Now, we'll say this version of the TV show turned movie from an HBO series turned out better than the Sex and the City movie.
I'll take your word for it because I didn't see it.
It's got that going for it.
I've never seen any Sex and the City moment, let alone the movie.
I haven't seen a lot of them.
But I did watch all of the Entourage. I actually made a list of the people who were in this movie just cameos. By the way, Billy Bob Thornton's son is played by Haley Joel Osment.
Yes.
I did not know that until I saw the credits.
How old is he now?
Not as old as you think, but it looks like he ate young Haley Joel Osment.
Yes, he does. Oh.
Not to be mean, but
he's
he
a big
has,
one, huh?
Yes, he is.
He has a wide head now.
Yeah, he does.
Like a very.
So here are some of the cameos of this movie. Mark Cuban from Shark Tank and the Dallas Mavericks. Kelsey Grammer, actually a very funny cameo. Mm-hmm. There are sports guys, Rob Gronkowski and Russell Wilson and Clay Matthews and Tom Brady and Jim Gray, the sportscaster. David Arquette, Jon Favreau, Andrew Dice Clay, Gary Busey, Bob Saget, Greg Louganis, Pharrell Williams, Mark Wahlberg, who's the producer of this because he produced the series. It was kind of based on his life starting out as a young star in Hollywood. Jessica Alba, Armie Hammer, Common, Richard Schiff from The West Wing, Martin Landau and George Takei.
Yes.
Takei, how did they get in there? And how about Warren Buffett?
Yeah.
Warren Buffett has a cameo in Entourage? Yes, we're not kidding.
And that's not all of... I mean, there have to
that's
be more.
That's a tenth of the cameos that are in this
movie.
It's
just kind of trying to flat... It's... I guess they're saying, this is Hollywood, and maybe they're trying it satire, but if
no,
that's what
no,
there's
no satire here. This guy, yeah. Doug Ellen, who created the series and wrote, directed, edited, produced, and did everything else for this movie.
He's the only one who's not in it.
He's the only one who's not in it, but he... He just keeps the spirit of that show alive that, you know, for this guy, Vincent Chase, everything always works out. There are some obstacles in life, but he's the pretty boy, and he gets the girl, he gets the job, he gets whatever he wants. He gets the money, et cetera.
Everything.
That's, you know, that was the Entourage series, that was the movie. If you really like the series, you really like the movie. If you never saw the series, there's no reason to see the movie. And by the way, if you're a woman, there's really no reason to see this movie.
No. No, it's... We've had a really good summer for blockbusters putting women in powerful roles, and this is just women are set decoration in this movie.
Yeah.
They somehow take the most feared woman on the planet, Ronda Rousey, and manage to play her off as kind of like, isn't that cute? She beats people
right.
up.
Right, yes.
And it's
if you don't know who she is the cage fighting MMA specialist who kicks every other woman's butt, and some guys, too. Has she fought a guy?
I don't think so yet. No.
Yeah. So it feels moralistic to say, it's just objectifying women, but really that's what it's doing. And it doesn't even try to hide it. I just wonder what the casting was like for that. They turned women away clearly. So how many women are walking around Hollywood that auditioned to do this and like,
who are tens?
You're not hot enough to walk down. I don't understand this.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Miss Upton. We can't possibly find a place for you in this movie.
Yes, so it's there.
Yeah.
I mean, it got made. I hope this is the end of Entourage.
But I guarantee you it's not. Yeah. Well, will this make money?
It actually, the Wednesday night numbers came back, and it didn't look great for it. It made some money, but everyone sort of lowered their expectations for this upcoming weekend. Now, that being said, this, by audiences, a cinema score... Well, that's what audience members go and vote on.
Yeah.
That's an A-. People who are going to it are fans.
Yeah.
So the question is someone a fan going to be able to convince someone who's not a fan to go see this?
No.
I don't know.
If you're not a fan of Entourage,
critics
there's no
don't
reason to
like
see it.
Yeah. So it's not going to be the hit, but it costs them nothing to make.
What about the other comedy/light movie that's coming out this weekend, which is Melissa McCarthy in Spy?
What's interesting is we've got a lot of R-rated movies coming out this week, which is kind of odd for the middle of summer because... Kids can't go see them. Teens can't go see them. Spy, I didn't get to see. I wish I could have. Just didn't work out with scheduling. I'm going to pay to go see this, though, because I haven't heard a bad thing about it.
Really?
Like, I haven't heard a bad thing about it.
From my understanding, she is at the FBI or the CIA that she works for?
I think the CIA. She has to go undercover.
She's a desk jockey. She's like an analyst for the CIA. And then, for some reason, she has to go into the field.
Yes. And she meets up there with Jason Statham, who I may be pulling for more than anyone to become a megastar because I think he's great. If you go back and watch him in his early stuff, Lock, Sock, and Two Smoking Barrels, he's funny.
Is he in any big series that we can think of?
Big series?
Yeah. Movie series?
Yeah. He just showed up in Fast and Furious 7 this year.
Huh. What are the odds that Kyle really likes a guy who's in one of the Furious movies?
I just really want him to do... He's been sort of knocking on the door of being a superstar. And hopefully this does, because he's funny, he's charming, he does the action.
He was really good in The Italian Job with Mark Wahlberg, by the way.
He was very good. He was good in the first Transporter, and then they just kept making them.
Mm-hmm.
He was good in a very stupid movie that if you'd want dumb summer action, go rent Crank. Just, I'm not going to say much about it. Just go rent. It's just 90 minutes of action.
I think Jason Statham is having the career that Vin Diesel thought he was going to have.
Yeah. So Vin Diesel tried to act.
That's about it. Yeah. How'd that work out?
The knockaround guys.
Not so much. But Spy, is that going to do big at the box office?
Yeah, I think
weekend?
That's going to be the big one this weekend because, you know, San Andreas was huge last weekend, but I think everyone saw it that wanted to see it, and it'll still make some money. But Spy, I think that'll be the big winner this week.
All right, let me talk about another movie that is opening this weekend in St. Louis. I actually saw this at a screening a couple of weeks ago. It's called Love and Mercy. It is the story of Brian Wilson, who is the genius songwriter for the Beach Boys. Now, if you think of the Beach Boys as Surfing USA, that early stuff was relatively simple. Take some Chuck Berry riffs, turn it into a surfing song, you get some hits, and that's what the Beach Boys were. But then about 1965, Brian Wilson really started letting his creativity come through. And he was starting to write songs like Wouldn't It Be Nice and God Only Knows and Good Vibrations, things that were much more complex. And this movie shows you that Brian Wilson. But it all, and that Brian Wilson is played by an actor named Paul Dano, who the last time I saw him was in a movie called Prisoners, which came out a couple of years ago, and which was incredibly disturbing. I also saw him in a movie I liked a lot, which I recommended a couple of years ago, called Ruby Sparks. You ever see that one?
No.
That was written by his girlfriend, Zoe Kazan. And I'll just go off on a tangent here about that movie for a moment. In that movie, he is a writer who is frustrated because he can't come up with a new novel. And so he starts writing a novel about a young woman, and she appears. And it becomes apparent to him that what he writes on the page, that's what she says, and that's what she does, and that's who she becomes.
Hmm.
And so, I mean, it's kind of like a little literary fantasy thing, but it was written by a woman. And takes a turn that you wouldn't think it would take if it were written by Doug Ellen, the guy who wrote Entourage, because you know what he'd have a woman do if a man could control her. It's very different. So that's called Ruby Sparks, and that's a movie you may not know that you may want to put on your Netflix queue.
He was also in a couple other movies that are worth mentioning that he was great in, I thought, Little Miss Sunshine and There Will Be Blood.
Yes.
He was great in both.
Yes, he was the silent brother in Little Miss Sunshine.
Yes.
Yeah, he was very good in that. Paul Dano is his name, and he plays the young Brian Wilson. And you see that Brian Wilson creating all of these novel, at the time, sounds for an album that became known as Pet Sounds, which was such a breakthrough in terms of musical creativity that it knocked the Beatles for a loop, so much so that McCartney and Lennon realized we really have to up our game, and they came back with Sgt. Pepper's, which was another game changer. But Pet Sounds came first. And you see in this movie the young Brian Wilson in the studio with some of the members of the Wrecking Crew. Now, you may remember a few weeks ago I talked about the Wrecking Crew because their documentary is finally available streaming online. The Wrecking Crew were the Los Angeles-based studio musicians who played on about 10,000 hit songs. Every song that was recorded in Los Angeles, including many of the Beach Boys songs, it was the Wrecking Crew that played on them. And in fact, in the movie, in Love and Mercy, this Brian Wilson movie, you see Brian Wilson telling Mike Love and Carl Wilson and Dennis Wilson and Al Jardine, the other members of the band, his brothers and cousins and friend, he says to them, look, I don't want to go out on tour anymore. I know we have all these hit songs, and I know we're making a lot of money, but I'm not good on stage. I don't like being just the guy who's playing bass on stage. I want to stay home, and I want to write the songs. I have all these creative ideas exploding inside of my head. You guys go out and be the Beach Boys, and I will write the stuff and have it ready for you that when you come back off the road, you'll go into the studio, and you'll just have to sing the stuff, and I'll record it with the Wrecking Crew. And they reluctantly agree to that. And while they're gone, he's creating Pet Sounds with these great musicians, Hal Blaine, the drummer, and Carol Kay, the bass player. And all of these great musicians are also portrayed in the movie from the Wrecking Crew. And those scenes are fantastic because it's very rare that you get to see a musical biopic where the creativity is right there in front of you. I can tell you that it happened in the James Brown movie that came out last year, Get On Up, where James Brown is explaining to his musicians, every one of you, no matter what you're playing, you're a drum. The horns, you're a drum. The guitars, you're a drum. I mean, it's a great scene in there because it was all about the rhythm for James Brown. Well, in this one, you see Brian Wilson experimenting with new sounds, having people playing their instruments in different ways, bringing in odd things that aren't really musical instruments, but putting them in there as part of the sound and creating this this new musical paradigm with stuff that nobody had ever done before. Those scenes are fantastic. But that's only half the movie. The other half of the movie, which is going on at the same time, is the older Brian Wilson, who's not played by Paul Dano in makeup. He's played by John Cusack.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific actor. And that Brian Wilson is the older Brian Wilson who had fallen under the spell, unfortunately, of a whack job psychologist by the name of Dr. Eugene Landy, who really shouldn't be called a doctor. In fact, later we find out that his medical all his medical stuff is taken away. His license is taken away. But he is essentially over-medicating Brian Wilson to the point where he's really in just a stupor. He has himself named the guardian of Brian Wilson and his estate and everything else. He won't let Brian Wilson eat. He won't let him drink certain things. He keeps his refrigerators and his cabinets locked up. He has him taking pills upon pills upon pills upon pills and turning him into nothing more than a zombie head case in his own home and in his own life. And it's in that timeline that Brian Wilson meets a woman by the name of Miranda at a Cadillac dealership. Miranda is played by Elizabeth Banks in what I think is the best performance she's ever given.
Wow.
And he falls for her, and she kind of falls for him, but she's kind of both intrigued and kind of disgusted by this Eugene Landy and the strings he's pulling as if Brian Wilson were his personal marionette. And obviously Landy is in it because he's getting a lot of money from Brian Wilson and controlling him and his estate and all of that. And Miranda wants to break free. Now, I don't think I need to say spoiler alert on a movie that's about a real guy and incidents that happened decades ago. But I will tell you that Brian and Miranda Wilson are still a couple and were involved in the production of this movie.
Okay.
And so we get to see that timeline, but that's the harder part of the movie to do because it's hard to portray mental illness on the screen. People who are having trouble getting through their daily life because they've got stuff going on inside their head, that's hard to portray on the screen. I think the only time it's ever been done really effectively was when Russell Crowe played John Nash in A Beautiful Mind, and you got to see all the
equations and numbers.
And the hallucinations that were going on and all of that sort of stuff. It was brilliantly portrayed. I thought Ron Howard did a great job with the movie. There were issues with the movie, but it was brilliantly portrayed on screen. In this, you don't see that so much. And in fact, that part of the movie, it's funny that Brian Wilson is almost schizophrenic because that part of the movie is schizophrenic. But one thing I like about Love and Mercy is that they're telling the Brian Wilson story without telling his entire life. Yes, you see some about his abusive father, but it's in the context of when he was in the studio and when he was trying to create all of this stuff. You don't see him as a young boy first trying to play the piano, and we follow him through every year or every era of his life. You see these two pieces of his life told as kind of parallel stories, the Pet Sounds part and the freaked out older Brian Wilson part. And it's told very, very well. When I first walked out of there, I thought this movie's too long and too schizophrenic. But more and more as I've thought about this movie, the performances, I think, are really, really good. Paul Dano, whatever it is, and John Cusack really are good. And Elizabeth Banks is great. And by the way, Eugene Landy in this movie, can you get a more go-to actor? He's played by Paul Giamatti. Holy cow, this guy can act anything.
He's going to get a Lifetime Achievement Award at some point.
He should, because he's terrific in this, just like he's terrific in everything else. I think the only person who will not like this movie is Mike Love, the lead singer of the Beach Boys. He comes off as a jerk, and by the way, I'd heard stories about him.
Close to a true story, yeah.
Yeah.
Close to,
yeah, so I don't know that it's all true, but I don't have any trouble believing that it's true. I think Love and Mercy is one of the best musical biopics I've seen since the James Brown movie last year.
Mm-hmm.
which I also really liked. It's differently told, and it's different because it has that mental health aspect to it. But the parts of the movie where you see Brian Wilson, the musical genius in his early days, creating a new kind of music that later inspired the band, that inspired the rest of the world, I think it's really, really well done. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
What do you give Entourage, by the way, on a scale of 10?
3.
Yeah, okay.
I
was going to go 2.5. I'll give you the 3.
Okay.
I'll give you that.
Because there were moments that were charming.
Yeah.
Very few and far between.
So any other movies coming out this weekend that we need to even mention?
Insidious Chapter 3. This is another one of these low-budget films. I really liked the first Insidious. The second one I thought was all right, and now they're going for the trifecta. But Insidious 3, if you need to see that.
Okay.
I would recommend either of the other two, or if you still haven't seen it, Mad Max.
Any other showbiz stories we have to get to?
I've got a couple really fast. This date, what's today's date, I believe?
June 5th.
Yeah.
June 5th, 30 years ago today, what happened?
30 years ago today, June 5th, I don't know.
Ferris Bueller took his day off.
Oh, really?
30-year anniversary of Ferris Bueller's day off. If I'd have known that, I'd have called out sick. But no, 30 years ago today, so that was just something.
How does he get onto the float at the parade and sing the song?
Why not?
Come on.
That'd be great.
I go along with all the other stuff with Cameron and with Sloan and all the other stuff that goes on in the movie.
Including the car out of...
Yes.
You go along with that, but
yes.
Not on the float.
Yes.
That's where you draw the line.
Trying to reverse the odometer by putting it in reverse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm down for all of that.
Yeah.
But what is it, Twist and Shout? He's singing on the float.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know how they found this out? The folks over at Baseball Prospectus looked at the scene where he's at the game, and they determined it was a Cubs-Braves game. So they started looking at, okay, what are the possible days this could be based on what happened in the game, because they used real footage. They found it out. They went someone who was on the production crew, and they confirmed, yep, it was this day in June.
Wow.
So not like the Back to the Future thing where every year you see a different picture of the readout.
So wait a second. Are you saying that the events of Ferris Bueller's day off took place on June 5th?
Or the
movie came out on June 5th?
The events were filmed on June 5th, 1985, at least that part of it. So they view that as this whole day off. Because that's the only thing you can tie to a specific
But that's
day.
Not when the movie came out.
No.
Okay.
Yes, so pretty interesting. And then as we gear up for Sharknado 3.
No one's gearing up for
yes,
that.
Yes, we are.
No.
We're all gearing up for
no,
Sharknado
3. No one
3.
Not related to Tara Reid. Is that her name?
Tara Reid, yes.
Mark Cuban is also in that.
Is that why Jaws was on AMC last night?
Jaws is on AMC because they're preparing to show it in theaters again.
Oh.
That's the 40th anniversary. They're showing it a special event. I did this last week when you weren't here. I mentioned this. Jaws is coming back to theaters. You know how when you see it sitting in a movie theater before the previews, and they say, "Oh, this special event, the Shakespeare Royal Company."
Yeah,
they're showing Jaws on the big screen again. Special events, 500 screens nationwide, I believe, for the 40th anniversary. I've never seen it, so I'm going to try and go.
You've never seen
on the
Jaws?
Big screen, on the big screen, on the big screen. I've seen Jaws.
Okay,
I own Jaws.
Okay,
I love Jaws.
Okay,
so gearing up for Sharknado 3. Yes, we're going to let that go this time. Sci-Fi is promoting their next movie, and it is called Lavalantula.
Lavalantula?
That is lava, avalanche, and tarantula all together.
Oh.
And they released the first image of it. It looks great. Here's what I love about it. The stars of it, all from Police Academy, Steve Guttenberg, Leslie Easterbrook, Michael Winslow.
Wow.
This is going to be great. Set your DVRs. I think they may be on to something here.
You know, I think I'm going to make a movie. I'm going to call it Lavalampula. It's about some kids in the 70s who thought they were cool because they had black lights and lava lamps in their dorm room. And one of them knocked it over, realized it was hot, the goo spilled out, that stain stayed on the floor of that dorm room forever.
Yep.
Lavalampula.
The shag carpet.
carpet. Look for it at a theater near you.
Lavalantula, Saturday, July 25th. That's it, Paul.
All right. Thank you very much. Colin Jeffrey, Showbiz Boy, brought to you by Oreck Home Centers throughout the St. Louis area, all locally owned and operated. O-R-E-C-K spells Oreck.